Welcome to the Liverpool Way podcast. My name's Dave Usher. I'm the editor of the Liverpool Way website, and I'll be hosting the podcast at least for now until we can find somebody to take over from me and let me get back into my comfort zone of answering questions instead of asking them. So we just decided a couple of days before the season kicked off, really, that we wanted to bring the podcast back. So it was a little bit rushed. Not a great deal of planning's gone into it, and we've got some things to work through. Sound quality is not necessarily the way we'd like it, ideally. That's something that we'll figure out as we go along. But the main thing was to just get something out there. So we're looking to do this at least after every game, and we'll maybe throw in one or two extras, depending on the situation. If something interesting happens, then we'll maybe try to just get one out quickly. So there was six of us on this one, which is probably a little bit too many. It'll be more streamlined in future. We'll try to get it a little bit more conversation type based rather than just me asking questions and the lads answering. But we'll work that out as we go along. So for now, hopefully you'll enjoy this and we'll make it a regular thing throughout the season. So we're recording this a couple of hours after the win over Norwich, and joining me tonight, we've got Paul Natton, Ian Brown, Julian Richards, John Gallagher and Dan Thomas. Right, so good start today. 3-0 win over Norwich. Just get some general thoughts from you. So we'll start with Paul. What did you make of it today?
Yeah, just business as usual, really, wasn't it? It's what you'd expect, exactly what you'd expect at this stage of the season from Liverpool. If we're kind of writing off last season, which I think we should, as a ridiculous sort of perfect storm blip, it just seemed like we were totally back in the groove, even allowing for the fact that the midfield was nothing like what we'd expect to see when we're full strength. So, yeah, made up, but it wasn't a surprise. I expected us to beat them and beat them well, and that's what we did.
Dan, what about you?
Yeah, I'd resonate with what Paul said there. It's I expected to win today and I expected us to win well. We have a good record against Norwich. It's not since the days of Ian Culverhouse and Jeremy Goss and Brian Gunn that we've had a bad result, though, that I can remember. We were clinical. We took our chances. And the most pleasing thing for me, Dave, was a clean sheet. I want us to get back to being you're getting one or two good chances a game, if that kind of machine we were 2 years ago. So I was very, very pleased for the goalkeeper to have made one admittedly very, very good save. I was very pleased with how we defended.
Yeah, I thought we did defend well. It's good having Virgil back, obviously. I think Joel Matip's probably the most underrated player in the entire league. I just don't think people realise how brilliant he is. He's absolutely world class, and nobody's 100%. Ever talked about it. Probably because he's got such a low profile. He's not on social media, and he's a great deal of interviews and that, but he's just absolutely fantastic, and I just don't think people realise how good he is. But yeah, clean sheet, great. And all in all, I just thought, like, it was what I was expecting. I wasn't, like, pleasantly surprised or anything like that. I thought we'd win comfortably. And yeah, the game went pretty much as I thought it would, really. So anything to add to that, John?
Yeah, I think basically it was a bit of a slow start. Norwich had a bit of early bluster, if you like. Tried to force the issue a bit while we just grew into it, just took our time. And basically, you know, once the first goal went in, you know, it's just a question of, you know, how many we'd scored and, you know, being clinical with the chances when they came. Yeah, it's just professional from start to finish after the first maybe 10 or 15 minutes or so when we settled down.
So I'm just thinking about the team selection and the midfield, because it was basically the three midfield players who you'd have as first choice. None of them started the game. So it was a backup midfield today. Just wondering, Jules, what did you think when you saw the team line up? Were you worried about that? Or, you know, what were your thoughts generally on the team selection?
You're always a bit worried when you see Cater in the team sheet, because you never know what you're going to get from him. The reality of how he actually plays, and then the fantasy of how people on Twitter think he's going to play. But I thought he did actually quite well. Nothing really spectacular, just neat and tidy. Ox, you know, I don't know. I don't even know what I expect from him anymore. I expect the player of what 3 years ago now, the gung ho, you know, scoring against City in the Champions League. But he just never gets a run of games to be able to put that sort of form together. I didn't think he was bad. I didn't think he was particularly good, but you know, he did his job. Milner, you know, I love Milner. I think he did exactly what was expected of him. Did I think Fabinho would play though? Yeah, I did. I know he's been at the Copa America, but he's such a calm, composed player. He doesn't often expend a lot of energy, especially in a game away at Norwich, where we know we're going to have a lot of possession, and they're not going to be attacking as much as other teams. But a little surprised, but I think you know Klopp knows what he's doing, and it turned out quite well in the end. I think no complaints there in the end.
So I thought Ox was disappointing, but then that's probably because I gave him such a big build-up that he's made me look a bit of a dickhead, because I went on Twitter saying, really got a sneaky feeling he's going to have a great... I still do, you know, the one game's not going to change that. But the reason why I was expecting so much from Ox, really, it's sometimes when you watch him, like, he'll come off the bench in a game, and I'm like, whoa, look at Ox there, he looks like someone shot him out of a cannon. You know, he's just got that like extra injection of pace. He gets it, and he'll just blow past someone. And he'll get a shot away, and he's got that in him to do that. And he's been like that in pre-season. I thought he's looked like really sharp. He's looked like he's playing at top speed, and everybody else has looked like they were playing a pre-season game. And I thought, yeah, he's like got a full pre-season behind him for once. And I think we're going to see the Ox that we got before the bad injury that he had, because he had that little spell for a few months where you were thinking, yeah, okay, we've got ourselves a really good player here. And then we've only seen it in little spurts since. So I thought today was a really good opportunity for him to, you know, to say, yeah, I've got my starter yet, and you're going to take some shifting to get me out the team. And he didn't do that. And I don't know whether that was just similar to the way Genie would just play to instructions, and he'd play safe and he was covering for other people and not really charging forward and making things happen. I don't know whether Ox was doing that or whether he just didn't have a great game, but I was a bit disappointed in him, whereas I was quite happy with Keita. And I think that's not necessarily because there was a massive difference in how they played, just I've got low expectations of Keita and I had higher expectations of Ox. But it's just I just thought like the midfield looked better when Fabinho came on, which is what you'd expect because he's, you know, he's totally world class. But Brownie, I know you're not a particularly big fan of Keita either. What did you make of him today?
I thought he was all right, yeah. I think out of the three of them, I thought he probably was the most solid out of them. You know, I don't think Millie necessarily is at his best playing in the six.
No.
So the moment Fabinho came on, you could just see we just completely got control of the game. And from then, it was just a case of seeing the game out. It was comfortable then. But definitely out of the three of them, Naby, he was solid. Not in spectacular, you know. But I'm not a big fan of him at all. As I don't think many of us are, really. You know, he's flattered to deceive any since we've brought him in. He's obviously a good player. He just doesn't quite do enough for how much we paid for him, really. You'd expect a little bit more with all the hype that we had when we signed him. But yeah, he was okay. He was all right. But generally, I think looking at the midfield, you could tell, for me anyway, it was a bit of a backup midfield. I'd expect Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago, you know, once they're all up and running, that'd be the main midfield. So, I mean, if you think about it, starting the season with a completely backup midfield and going away and getting a comfortable win, you've got to be happy with that. That's a good start.
Something that I was going to bring up later on, but we may as well do it now, really. I know Dan's going to be having a good moan about the lack of transfers coming in and stuff, but I want to just touch on the midfield issue, just based on what Klopp said on Friday. Now, I'd more or less come around to the idea anyway of us not signing a replacement for Genie now. Probably from when it became apparent in pre-season that Elliot was playing in midfield, not in the front three, which suggested, okay, that's what the plan is for him. So as soon as I seen that, I was okay with us not signing a replacement for Genie, because to me, the only makes sense, it makes sense to sign somebody to replace somebody who's going, whether that be Cater or whether that be Ox. It's not going to be Ox because of the English quota. We can't really let him go. He's got to stay. And Cater's obviously not going anywhere. So with that in mind, I don't think signing another midfielder is practical because of the knock-on effect that that's going to have on Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott. It's like, if you've got these really talented kids and you want to bring them through, you can't keep putting roadblocks in the way. So I'm good with not replacing Genie. But I'm just wondering what the rest of you think. So I'll start with you, Dan, because I pretty much know what your answer is going to be to it. But go on, away you go.
The thing for me, Dave, is, and I completely agree that it's important that we get Jones and Elliott on the field as much as we can. My concern isn't the number of midfielders we've got. As Paul will probably say when you come to him, we've got lots of place for those positions. The worry I have is that you can't depend on Keita and you can't depend on Oxlade-Chamberlain. And to be quite honest, you can always depend on Henderson to stay fit. I mean, I know if those three go down, we've still got another four. But, you know, like Thiago, we have to be careful with him because he's quite injury prone as well. Not that we saw that particularly last season. Obviously, he got crocs with a quite frankly ridiculous tackle in the derby. But, you know, he played most of the games after that. But we have to be careful with him. So my concern isn't necessarily that we don't have enough, because we do. It's just that the midfielders we have tend to pick up quite a few injuries. I'm kind of come round to your way of thinking more than you would think, to be honest, as in it's not really a priority. My priority of a transfer lies further up the field, but we'll come to that later on, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, because I agree with that. So Paul, do you want to take over on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, I'm absolutely sound with it. I mean, we've got eight players for three positions in midfield. I'm 100% into the idea that we want to develop young players and bring them through. It's what I wanted back in the dark days before the almost bankruptcy, when we were looking at the ownership model and how we move forward and how we have success as a club in a way that's palatable to the fans. You know, we should be living within our means, and we should be developing our own players. And we've got the right managers to do that. We've got the right recruitment set up to do that. So let's do it. I think the only thing that our midfield lacks is goals. But that has to be, if we bring goals into the midfield, it has to be on the basis of one out, one in. Numbers-wise, eight for three places is exactly what we need. And I think broadly speaking, we've got just about everything you would want in a midfield covered amongst the players that we've got there. I mean, and arguably you could say, it is a leap because neither of them have really kicked on yet, but you could definitely say that Kurt and Harvey have got the capacity to add goals themselves. So if they develop as we would all hope, then I think that's what we'll see. I mean, I suppose just in terms of the broader issue of transfers, that it is goals that I want us to sign, but I wouldn't be signing them for midfield. I'm more than happy with the midfield that we've got.
Well, that brings us to the front three, because, I mean, today, I don't know, maybe I'm just getting a bit carried away just because it feels like actual football's back, because last year was just, to me, it's like, you know, it wasn't even the same sport. It was like, you can't really form any judgments based on anything that happened last year to me. And watching it today, it felt like the old front three. I know, like, Firmino didn't start. I know, like, obviously, Jota started and he scored. But from when Bobby came on, there was just little things that I hadn't seen, like, last year and even the year before, to be honest, you know, at times. It felt like they were enjoying themselves and they were trying to play each other in more. I mean, what summed it up for me was at the end when Mo's cleaned through and all he's got to do is just shift it onto his left foot and roll it in the corner. And instead, the only thing in his mind was trying to find Manny to get him a goal because he was the only one who hadn't scored. And I didn't care that he didn't score. I was just more encouraged by the fact he was trying to play Sadio in, because I don't care what anybody says, there was definitely a period where them two were just not on the same page. They were not really playing each other in. They didn't look particularly happy playing together. I'm not saying they didn't like each other or there was like any kind of animosity there, but they weren't really playing the way they were when, you know, in the first season that Mo was here, for example. And I don't know, today I just got that feeling that, like, that was more like the way it used to be, you know, the way they were all trying to play for each other. Joe, what did you think about that?
Well, yeah, that's a good point, actually, Dave, because if you remember a game last season, I think it was Chelsea at home, when I can't remember what player it was. It might have been Mane. Someone got the ball leaded at them from maybe 3 or 4 yards away. But I think it might have been by that the Chelsea midfielder whose name escapes me now. But there was no sort of backup to, you know, backing the teammate up. You know, no one was surrounding the referee or anything like that. And I just felt like in that respect there was something missing last season from the actual, you know, camaraderie of the squad. Obviously, results come into effect, you know, losing games, 6 games at home on the bounce, etc. But today it did seem a lot more relaxed and settled, and, you know, the point you make about Mo trying to slip Sadio in, you know, you're looking at it from that perspective, you know, for the greater good in the long term, it is like a positive. So long may it continue.
Jules, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with him. It felt like a classic front three, you know, as opposed to new front three when Jota's playing. Not quite a vintage display, but it certainly felt like a throwback. I mean, it's good that they're all playing. They look to be enjoying their football. We even got the usual Mane backheel to nobody, which is a personal favourite of mine when he's playing. I didn't have such a hard time with Firmino last year as most people. I still like watching him play, even when he was giving the ball away needlessly. I like to see him in there with the other two. I think he is probably a better complement to them than Jota, just because of the way the team's set up. But I mentioned it earlier that I still find it very strange how prolific Jota is. I don't know why. I just don't seem to be able to wrap my head around. He's this prolific and he's this good, but I'd like to hope that we Klopp doesn't stick to the tried and trusted classic three. He does rotate it a bit more. We do see sometimes Salah through the middle or something like that, just to keep it fresh as we go through the season.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And also, it doesn't work when the four of them play. Now, it is a small sample size, but I don't know, any time when he's tried to switch to 4-2-3-1, it's not worked. He usually goes with Mo through the middle, and then Bobby is the 10. And Bobby, as a 10, just gets lost, because it's like he can do that job when he's playing as the 9. But when he's the 10 and then there's a 9, he just drops deeper and deeper, and it's just not worked. And maybe that's just something that needs a bit more work, and in time it could work. But I agree with what you just said there. I think we need more rotation of the front three rather than trying to shoehorn all four of them in if they're all playing well. But then the problem you've got there is, like, you know, Bobby will be fine if he's rotated. Jota will be fine if he's rotated. The other two are going to be spitting feathers any time they're left out, because they expect to just play every game. Especially Mo, because he's like Superman. You know, he never needs a rest or anything, does he? Maybe Sadio will be a bit more open to it because of how he struggled last year and everyone said he needed a rest. But anytime you rotate Mo, you can see he's just sat there like seething.
I would say just one final thing on that. You can't play all four. Whenever he tries to get all four on the pitch, it always smacks to me of when Julio used to throw, when we were losing a game, he'd throw every striker that he had on, and it would all just go to pieces up front because everyone was trying to score, no one was trying to create, and it just led to an even more blunt attack. So yeah, I mean, I don't really want to see the four of them on the pitch unless it's emergency situation at the end of a game.
So at the back, obviously we had Virgil and Matip, but what are we expecting in terms of, you get a lot of rotation, but you don't really want to change the defence around too much. But when you've got Gomez and Konate there as well, it's going to be difficult to not play them. And maybe Virgil is going to need to take it out now and again, you know, just easing them back in rather than just say, right, you're playing 50 games this season. Do you think there's going to be much rotation at the back, or will it be the best back four plays more often than not and the others have to wait for injuries? What do you think there, John?
Well, obviously Van Dijk, he's the absolute shoo-in to play regardless. So you're looking at it and thinking it's like 1 from 3 then, isn't it? But obviously with the Champions League, you know, games midweek, Saturday, I think a lot will depend on the opposition as well who we're playing might come into consideration. You know, plan ahead for certain games. So if we're playing, say, Chelsea or City, like a week or 2 weeks ahead, you know, we might sort of rotate the week before and play Kanate in a, against like a lesser team lower in the table. So it's just about making sure everyone's happy with the balance and the minutes that they're given. You know, Virgil comes back to the player that we know obviously he is. So, but at the moment, obviously Matip's been faultless today. He's come in, so he should stay in, you know, for the foreseeable. Hopefully he doesn't, you know, pull up injured anytime soon. He'll have a good run in the team with Virgil. And maybe come mid-September when the games start coming Wednesday, Saturday, that'll be the time to maybe look at maybe changing one for the game at a time here and there.
And Brownie, what did you make it cost us today?
Yeah, I thought he was really good until the last 20 minutes or so. Comment from Klopp was hilarious at the end.
Yeah.
Until he got unplugged or whatever he was, he said about him. He was brilliant. Do you know, that was a concern coming into the game. Obviously, like a Robbo, you know. We know what Robbo is. He's an unbelievable player. I don't know much about Costas, to be honest. I've watched a couple of friendlies. He's hardly played, really, in a proper game. I was made up with him, especially final third. I thought his, you know, his delivery into the box and everything, it was very Robbo-like. Defensively, he had a couple of moments where, you know, he can tidy it up a little bit, but no, I'm really excited by the fact that it looks as though we've got a good backup left-back who we can call upon. You know, he's very similar in mould to Robbo. You know, he's up and down the pitch, he's whipping balls in. We've got a very set way of playing, haven't we, where we need that fullback to be able to get up and down the pitch and put those balls in, and it looks like he can do that. So now, positive, just, you know, he needs to work on his fitness a bit, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was about 70 minutes, as you say. We were talking about it in the chat, weren't we? And he made a mistake, and I said, like, he looks absolutely knackered. And then the next thing, he puts his foot on the ball, and he's looking around, like, thinking where to pass. And then he's taking ages, and then he loses it. And then the rest of the lads are, like, having a go at him, you know, telling him to sharpen up. You could see his socks were rolled down.
Yeah, I was going to say about his socks, yeah. It's always a telltale sign, and he was begging to get brought off at that point. Put me on the left back, take me off. That's what he was saying.
Like, Trent's socks are down all game, but Costas, his socks were up normal, and then they were down, and you're like, okay, you can see he's flagging a little bit here. But he got left on probably because Klopp thinking, we're winning the game, it's under control. He needs the 90 minutes, you know, just so he's just to help him adapt and get used to it rather than bring him off. Because if you bring him off, he's going to have to play 90 minutes next week. So I think that was, even though he could see he was knackered, he thought, no, I need to leave him out there. But yeah, I thought he was encouraging. I thought he played quite well. Defensively, I don't know, he's not being tested enough yet. But what did you think, Paul Costas?
Yeah, I agree with what you both said there, really. I mean, I thought, yeah, there wasn't much of a test defensively. There was a couple of moments where his concentration seemed to dip a little bit. But going forward, he looks a little bit like a mini Robbo. Mm. I mean, I think the just reflecting on some of the points you were both touching on there in terms of, you know, rotation and also thinking about the centre-halves, I wonder maybe whether this is the first new territory for Klopp, really, at Liverpool. Maybe in his career, even. I'm not aware of him ever having a real array of riches like he's got now. Certainly, virtually the whole squad fit. And he's now in a situation where he's got to make choices about who plays and also make sure that the backups are ready to deliver if they need to come in rather than he chooses to put them in. So I was thinking as you were talking about, as you were talking about Virgil and Joel, and whether they play every week. And John was talking about the Wednesday Saturday routine. I think we also maybe need to be looking at the domestic cups and going a little bit stronger in them this season, particularly as Harvey and Kurt are going to need games, and they're not necessarily going to be picked to start every league or Champions League game. Because, you know, if we're going to go all the way, we're going to need the full squad, but we want them to be ready. And I think one of the problems we've had in the past is that sometimes some of the players who come in and have not quite been. We've now got the options, so we need to use them. But I don't think Klopp's ever been in this. From my knowledge of his career, I don't think he's ever really been in the situation before where he's actually had this number of top quality options. So while I don't expect him to falter in any sense, because he gets virtually everything right. He's incredible in that sense. It is maybe new ground for him.
Yeah, well, it's generally been the midfield gets rotated a lot and the rest of the team picks itself, isn't it? But that's got to change this year, I think, because you can't just keep running the front three lads out week after week after week. And Trent as well. That might be a little bit of a concern. It's like whether there's too much of a drop-off when Nico comes in, because he kind of went backwards a bit last season. But then, as I say, I don't really want to judge too much based on last season, because it was a total outlier. But so I don't know whether this game today, I wouldn't have thought it's changed anybody's opinions on the, you know, our chances for the season as a whole, because I'm sure we all expected to win today anyway. And I don't think what any other teams have done is going to make too much difference to how we feel about it. But I think we'll win the league. Not everyone in here thinks so. I know like some of you are more worried about City than I am, but just going to go around and just get your thoughts on where you think we'll finish and what you think the top four is going to be. So I'll start with you, Dan.
I think the top four will be Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool and United. The order, maybe not as questionable. I'm pretty confident that we're the top four. I'm really undecided, because I feel a lot better after seeing the way we played today, because there were so many signs of it being the old Liverpool. And I'm with you that last season was just a complete freak show. There was nothing normal about last season. From my point of view, I can't see us winning the league unless we bring in another forward. So I know we might have a movement with Origi and Shaqiri going, but for me, when we get to January, and we lose Sadio and more for and another, the run of games we have doesn't seem to be too hard, but it's still a number of players down and two of our most dangerous players down. For me, we need to be able to call on someone we can depend on, and at the moment we don't have it, because with all due respect to what he's achieved for us, that's not Divock Origi anymore. And Shaqiri, as good a player as he is just not available. He's injured more often than he isn't, and that's a real concern for me. And that's why I don't think we'll win the league. I think we'll probably finish third again. I'm open to changing my mind if we bring in a forward of the requisite quality. And that's not me being negative. I just think that Man City and Chelsea have taken the moves that they need to make, or are about to make the moves that they need to make to strengthen the squad sufficiently.
That's fine. I'll tell you where you're wrong in a minute, but I'll just let the other lads go first. Jules?
I am more of a natural football pessimist than most of you in here. It's just the sheer numbers that both City and Chelsea have is my biggest worry. And it is always, I worry about what the other team are doing rather than what we're doing. I wouldn't be surprised if we won the league. I wouldn't be shocked if we won the league. You know, we won it 2 years ago. We had a freak season last year. It's whether we keep everybody fit. I'm not so concerned about the numbers like Dan is about. We absolutely need another striker, another forward that will help us challenge. I think Klopp again knows what he's doing. I think we do have that ability there. It's just the depth of squad that Chelsea and City have. As for United, they've got a pretty good squad too. Their problem is their manager. If they ever replaced him with someone competent, they've put together a pretty decent squad, albeit mostly players I don't think would get in our team. It is overall a good squad. I would say probably we're finishing third or fourth. If I had to bet on it, having seen us today, I would probably now say third. I did think fourth, but I think third. And I don't think we'll be very far behind City or Chelsea. But I just can't see us just because of their sheer numbers. The only thing I would say is that Tuchel's now not, he's only been at Chelsea for half the season. He does sometimes great on players the way his coaching method. Maybe, you know what Chelsea teams have been like, squads have been like in the past. They turn very quickly on their managers. That's the only wrinkle I could see. But, I mean, he's just won them the European Cup, so I can't see it happening this season. So, hopeful, but not positive about it.
Brownie?
Going into today, I'd have said City are the favourites. We're probably the next best team. I mean, one of the big things I always look at when I'm thinking about how we're going to do this season is look at your rivals and, you know, how many of their players will get in your team. Genuinely, and I include City in this, when I look at the other teams, there's hardly any players from the other teams I'd take. So that's got to be a good thing. So I don't know. I'm hopeful. I think City are favourites. I think that's fair. They've won it, what, three times out of the last four. They're obviously going big in the transfer market. You can't discount that. I think it's fair to say that they're clearly a good team. But I'm not having Chelsea being favourites ahead of us, to be honest with you. I think we've got a better team than Chelsea. I can't wait to play them in a couple of weeks. Put a marker down. I'm just giddy about the season in general. Just totally giddy. All the fans are back. That today was just brilliant, you know, just scoring goals, earning the away end, going off on one. I'm just buzzing that it's back, absolutely buzzing that it's back. Bring it on, I reckon we've got a great chance.
He's right. Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's forgotten just how good we are. I just think you look at that team and there's world-class players all over the pitch. And the ones who aren't are not too far below. And we've got the best manager in the world, and that's not rose-tinted spectacles. This is the fella who does it without, you know, a quarter of a billion to throw at two players. He is, with no doubt in my mind, the best manager in the world. Every time there's an obstacle or a hurdle, he scales it. He overcomes it. You know, look, that finish last season was unbelievable. And it's just, everyone just seems to have completely lost sight of what a ridiculous perfect storm we faced as a club last season. There's no point listing them all now. It's old news. But to come through like he did, to take, what was it, 26 points out the last 30 and to finish third. Incredible. He is absolutely incredible. And I think everyone has lost sight of just how good we are. You know, we finished on this before last season. We were point for point with City over those two seasons. This is the team that has spent a billion and broken all the records. And we matched them toe-to-toe. And we beat them to the title. I think we're right up there, absolutely right up there. And the only thing that gives me pause for thought is if they sign Kane. And the reason for that is that I think what he might do, I suspect this season is going to come down to the head-to-heads between the top four, because I'm in agreement with all of you about who the top four will be. It's the same as last season. And I think he might just be the difference in more games against those clubs playing for City, but they haven't signed him yet. And the other factor is as well, is that with Guardiola, he's renowned for making big luxury signings and they blow up in his face. They don't work. You know, he's done that many times, done it at Barcelona. He's done it everywhere he's been. Sometimes he's too clever for his own good. Sometimes he wants to change a system or he wants to change a player. And many times, he's not a bum. You know, I'm not trying to make out, he doesn't know what he's doing. He does, but sometimes he's too clever and sometimes it doesn't work and it does actually backfire on him. But that's my concern, really. I suppose if Kane wasn't hovering there, I'd be very bullish about our chances of winning the league. I still think we're definitely capable of winning the league. I think the question mark with Kane is the only one that's in my mind. If they don't sign him, game on, I think we'll win it.
John?
Yeah, well, prior to this podcast, I was sort of third, fourth, but just hearing you lads talking about like the positivity you're showing, it sort of make me think otherwise now. You know, obviously you've got the absolute capability to win it again, but again, it's sort of a perfect storm from a positive perspective in terms of key players remaining fit. You know, Virgil getting back to his imperious best, you know, prior to his injury. The front three, you know, more so Salah staying fit, and you know, fair play to Salah, he's very seldom injured. So with that in mind, I'm thinking if all those things come to fruition, I think, you know, there's no reason why we can't win it again. But as Paul says, the whole Kane situation could be like a game changer in terms of, you know, if City do sign Kane, then it does make you think, well, what's the point of it? It sort of, you know, makes you think that they'll end up winning it again. You look at the Grealish signing with City and it's sort of, did they need him? It's like a bit of a vanity signing for my opinion, but Kane, you know, just what he brings you, guaranteed 35 goals a season, you know, could be the difference, but we'll have to wait and see.
Well, you say about guaranteed 35 goals a season. Well, he is at Tottenham, but there's no guarantee if he goes to City he'll get that, because obviously it's a completely different style of play. He may not fit in. Now, he might fit in and he might score 40 goals, who knows? But regardless of whether they sign Kane or not, I personally don't think they will. I just can't see Tottenham letting him go. But, you know, irrespective of that, I just think, as like Paul said, I think some people have forgotten how good we are, and it's based on last season, which I keep saying. Last season, totally disregard it. I mean, if anything, you can take positives from us for last season to come through what we came through and finished above Chelsea. Let's just point that out. We finished above Chelsea. So all this talk about like Chelsea being better than us. Well, yeah, they've signed Lukaku, who's, you know, Lukaku's the type of player, he's going to score a ton of goals against the lesser teams, which that's not a criticism because you need that. You know, Chelsea slipped up in games last year where they shouldn't have, and maybe having Lukaku there banging in hat-tricks against like the Watfords and Everton's. But yeah, that's helpful. So I'm not knocking that signing. All I'm saying is, let's not like be putting Chelsea above us based on a few good months under Tuchel and the fact that they've signed Lukaku. It's like, I think it was Brownie said he's not having Chelsea being better than us. Neither am I. But it's all the pundits seem to be. It's all like Chelsea, it's Man City. Oh, look what United have spent. People are just getting blinded by like money that's being spent. Because we've not spent big, we're being written off in some quarters. And I just think people are forgetting. You know, last year, no fans killed us. You know, you can talk about the injuries as well. But no fans. We lost 6 home games on the bounce. Which, I don't care who we are in defence, we're not losing 6 home games on the bounce with a full Anfield. It's just not happening. So that in itself, that we finished, 17 points behind City? There's 18 points right off the bat, like the 6 home games in a row that we lost. That's before you look at anything else. So that's you might look and go, oh, Liverpool were behind City last year. You've got to look, why? Why were we? And it was those exceptional circumstances. The season before, we were miles ahead of City. The season before that, it was neck and neck. There's a point in it. So why people are just thinking we can't finish above City now? I don't get it, because we've still got the same team. You know, we've lost Wijnaldum, but we've added Thiago and we've added Jota to the team that won the title by like a mile. So I don't really see, you know, any reason why we're not going to win it. Now, I'm not going to say we're going to run away with it and we're going to absolutely destroy everybody. We're not. I think it's going to be really close. It's going to go down to the wire. But I've got us finishing first, City second, and then it'll be a toss-up between Chelsea and United. It depends on how much Solskjaer hampers United or not. Because, you know, if he was any good, I'd be a lot more worried about United than I am now. But it was like Chelsea last year. I wasn't worried about Chelsea because Lampard was there. As soon as he went and they got a capable coach in with the players that they had, I think everyone knew, okay, this could be trouble here, you know. And look what they went on to do just from getting a capable coach. So that's the worry with United. But I just think, you know, the fans make such a difference. And I'm not just talking about Anfield either. I'm just talking about games in general. Our players thrive off not just the Anfield crowd. Like today, the players will have absolutely loved playing in like a hostile environment, because you get energised by it. I've seen Sadio saying through the week he can't wait to get booed again because it gives him extra motivation and he loves it. And I'm like, yeah, you know, Sadio suffered more than most last year. You know, he just couldn't get going. And I just think like no fans in the stadium just impacted people far more than it's being given credit for. So this year is back the way it was 2 years ago when we won the league. We've got like the full squad of players. We've got the fans back in. And City are not the City that they were 2-3 years ago. I don't care what anyone says. Just because they've spent 100 million on a player who may or may not succeed there. He's a really good player, Grealish, but he doesn't strike me as a Man City player. I just think they've lost David Silva. Well, I know that was a year ago. But is Grealish going to have the impact that David Silva had? Highly doubt it. So, to me, they're not as strong as everyone's making them out to be. Don't get me wrong, they're a really good side. And if they get Kane, that could be a game changer. But it's not 100% that it will be. I just think people are looking at other teams. And because they're spending money, they're like, oh, no, we've got to do that or we're in trouble. And we're not. We don't need to spend that kind of money. Which brings me back to the topic about what do we need. And I think we need to just be quick on this because we're going to wrap it up. But Dan was saying about wanting a forward. I would like another forward. But if we didn't get another forward, we're okay, barring unforeseen circumstances with injuries. So you'd like to have somebody, not necessarily bring in a big star who's going to take the place of someone who we've got. I mean, that's the dream. You'd want, oh, if you could get Mbappe, brilliant, get him in. But it's not realistic. So I just want someone who's going to make more of a contribution than Origi's going to make, because you can't rely on him to do anything. He's done nothing for 2 years. So it's a waste of a squad place. If we could move him on and get somebody in who's going to give us something, that I'd take that now, just before the window. Just one more forward would tip us over the edge. But if we don't get it, I still don't see any reason why we wouldn't win the league anyway. The only thing that's going to derail it is like injuries to key players. And you can't legislate for that anyway. You know, a lot of that just comes down to luck. Just going back, if you can sign one player between now and the window, what position are you looking at? Dan, we've already covered that with you. You want a striker. Jules?
Yeah, striker, forward. Doesn't have to be someone big. Like, Jota was a bolt out of nowhere, but when we signed him, it was like, oh, yeah, that'll do for me. Someone along that vein would be great.
John?
I'd like a midfielder. I was thinking of forward a few days back, but I'm thinking of the balance of our midfield, and I'm thinking you've got your senior ones like Hendo, Thiago, and Milner, and then you've got a couple of young lads, and then you've got the limbo players stuck in between, and Keita and Oxlade. So I'm thinking maybe we do need like a more senior midfielder to come in, just to, you know, in case one of them senior lads get injured, or maybe a couple of them. You know, we've seen what happened last year at centre back. So I'm thinking like a proper Premier League midfielder, someone good experience who's been around the block for a few years, someone like Ward-Prowse. You know, he's got his set-piece ability as well. So, someone like that, I'd be happy with.
Brownie?
Same as what you said, Dave, to be honest. I don't want to see any more of Divock, to be honest. It just makes me sad seeing him now, you know, considering what he's done for the club in the last few years, you know, when you look back on it. I just sigh every time I see him coming anywhere near the pitch. So, a forward who's going to be able to contribute a little bit, especially with the African Nations Cup. We're going to need to rely on someone around about January, whenever that is. So, yeah, somebody who's going to chip in, not necessarily playing centrally, play anywhere across the front three and chip in with a few goals. That'd be good.
Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it earlier. I think we need to add more goals if we can, and particularly with the African Cup of Nations coming up. I mean, the Jota comparison, I think, is a good one, and the sort of Jota standard players who I kind of see out there as possibilities are the likes of Neto and Rafinha, players like that. But I tell you this now, and you know, it's probably a load of rubbish, but if they think they can do a deal for Mbappe to sign a pre-contract in January, then I'd be happy if we didn't do anybody, if that's what they felt. Because I definitely think they've been sniffing, they've been talking. If they think behind the scenes we can get him on it, we can get him to sign a pre-contract agreement in January to come next summer, I'd make do and mend for a season to get him. Because if you get him, you've got like the best player in the world for the next 10 years. So, yeah, I think we need the goals, and I do think we need them this season. But I'd be prepared to make that sacrifice to get that top-class player.
Well, I think we all would. I mean, if you're talking about getting Mbappe in January, but I mean, let's look at ourselves. It's like highly unlikely.
No. I don't mean in January. I mean next season. But you can do the pre-contract
and wait. Yeah. Sign him in January. Get him next year. Yeah, I'm sure we'd all settle for that. Rather than sign somebody now. Yeah, if that was an option. But I just think COVID's probably killed any chance of that, because I just don't see us paying the kind of wages that he's...
No, I'm sure you're right.
But that's definitely a conversation worth having. Like, I've got more time to deal with it. Okay, so that's the first podcast of the season in the books. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll catch you next week, either before or after Burnley.
Well, the best word I can say, but we'll describe this, was boom. Ooh, what was this? It was really good.